Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So today is the auspicious appearance day of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. And we'll read one verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. I think there's supposed to be some bus coming soon, so class won't be that long. So it's so this is Canto 1, Chapter 13, Dhritarashtra quits home, text number 10. Bhavat Vida Bhagavatas Tirtha Bhuta Swayam Vibho Tirthi Kurvanti Tirthani Swantak Stena Vida Britta Bhavad Vida Bhagavatas Tirtha Bhuta Swayam Vibho Tirthi Kurvanti Tirthani Swantak Stena Katabrita Bhavad Vida Bhagavatas Tirtha Bhuta Swayam Vibho Tirthi Kurvanti Tirthani Swantak Stena Katabrita Bhavat, your good self, Vida, like Bhagavata, devotees, Tirtha, the holy place is a pilgrimage, Buddha, converted into Swayam, personally, Vibho, O powerful one. Tirthi Kurvanti, make into a holy place a pilgrimage. Tirthani, the holy places. Swanta Stena, having been situated in the heart. Gatabrita, the personality of Godhead. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. My Lord, devotees like your good self are verily holy places personified. Because you carry the personality of Godhead within your heart, you turn all places into places of pilgrimage. Purport. The personality of Godhead is omnipresent by His diverse potencies everywhere, just as the power of electricity is distributed everywhere within space. Similarly, the Lord's omnipresence is perceived and manifested by His unalloyed devotees like Vidura, just as electricity is manifested in an electric bulb. A pure devotee like Vidura always feels the presence of the Lord everywhere. He sees everything in the potency of the Lord, and the Lord in everything. The holy places all over the earth are meant for purifying the polluted consciousness of the human being by an atmosphere surcharged with the presence of the Lord's unalloyed devotees. If anyone visits a holy place, he must search out the pure devotees residing in such holy places, take lessons from them, try to apply such instructions in practical life, and thus gradually prepare oneself for the ultimate salvation, going back to Godhead. To go to some holy place of pilgrimage does not mean only to take a bath in the Ganges or Jamuna, or to visit the temples situated in those places. One should also find representatives of Vidura who have no desire in life save and except to serve the personality of Godhead. The personality of Godhead is always with such pure devotees because of their unalloyed service, which is without any tinge of fruit of action or utopian speculation. They're in the actual service of the Lord, specifically by the process of hearing and chanting. The pure devotees hear from the authorities and chant, sing and write of the glories of the Lord. Mahamuni Vyasadeva heard from Narada, and then he chanted in writing. Shukadeva Goswami heard, studied from his father, and he described it to Pariksit. That is the way of Srimad Bhagavatam. So by their actions, the pure devotees of the Lord can render any place into a place of pilgrimage, and the holy places are worth the name only on their account. Such pure devotees are able to rectify the polluted atmosphere of any place, and what to speak of a holy place rendered unholy by the questionable actions of interested persons who try to adopt a professional life at the cost of the reputation of a holy place. Bhavadvida bhagavatas tirtha bhutak swayam vibho tirthi korvanti tirthani svantakstena katha pritaha. My Lord, devotees like your good self are verily holy places personified. Because you carry the personality of Godhead within your heart, you turn all places into places of pilgrimage. Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimate Bhakti Viranta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vacharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pasakatyaya Deva Sitarane. Srila Prabhupada came to the Western world in 1965 on behalf of his spiritual master, his divine grace, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, who had requested him to distribute the message of Krishna consciousness to the Western world. So before that, although there were some attempts previously that what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada had sent some of his disciples to England, and they were sannyasis, and they stayed there for some time, and then they came back and said, it is not possible to convert these malechas and yavanas into devotees. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada at great expense had sent them there, and he was very disappointed. So Prabhupada, he had asked his spiritual master, he had written to him one time, actually the first time Prabhupada had seen his spiritual master, when he was invited by one of his friends to visit him. At that time Prabhupada was a householder and a student. And his father, Gaura Mohan Day, had often invited sadhus to come to his house, and he'd feed them prasadam and talk to them. But inevitably, most of them turned out to be simply persons in the dress of a sadhu looking for a free meal. So Prabhupada was not very impressed either by most of the sadhus that he saw. But his friend forced him to go and see this Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, although Prabhupada was rather unwilling, thinking that this was just another sadhu. So Prabhupada went up to see him, and he was speaking at one upstairs apartment on the roof of one house. And immediately upon seeing these Prabhupada, he was dressed in khadi cloth, which was a symbol of being part of the Gandhi movement for independence. And as soon as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada saw them, he asked him that you both are educated in English language, so why don't you preach the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission all around the world in English? So Prabhupada objected a little bit. He said, but now we're a dependent nation, and how is it possible that people will take us seriously? They'll think that why should we take the message of a subservient nation seriously? But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada said, no, this message is transcendental, it transcends any kind of designation. Whether it's India's a colony of England or not, it doesn't really matter. Krishna consciousness is transcendental to all considerations. And it is actually the only important thing within this world. So Prabhupada, he was impressed that this person actually believed in the mission of Lord Chaitanya, and that he was serious about distributing it. So although he didn't immediately become his disciple officially, he said, from that time on, I accepted him within my heart as my spiritual master. So in one sense, that was really the time of Prabhupada's second birth, spiritual birth, accepting the spiritual master. And of course, later on, in 1932, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada was ill-disposed. And one in December of 1932, I believe, that Srila Prabhupada wrote to him asking him, this is 11 years later, Prabhupada had taken initiation, and a few years after that he had written him, a couple of years after that, asking him, that you have so many disciples and they're doing so much for you. I'm a householder, I can't do very much, so what can I actually do to help you, to serve you? So again, he got the same reply, that you should become trained up in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, and then you should preach this mission of Krishna consciousness in English all over the world, that this will do good for you and do good for others. So this was a confirmation of Prabhupada's previous instruction from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada to preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. So Prabhupada began in India. He was a householder, and he was struggling with his business for many years because of his World War II and so many different seemingly obstacles. So by the time he was ready to come to the Western world, he was already 69 years old. The time that most people are ready to retire, especially at that time, people just didn't fly in jet planes as if you were getting on a bus. To go from one part of the world to the next was quite an endeavor. And what to speak of a sadhu in India who didn't have any money, there was no possibility of his just flying into a place and expect hundreds of followers to come there and greet him. At that time, no one had practically ever heard of Krishna. And those who had heard of Krishna, they thought that he was simply one of the many Hindu deities, not a very important Hindu deity. But Prabhupada, at the advanced age of 69, after translating and writing commentaries on the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, came to the Western world. Previously, he had spoken to one of his godbrothers, and he was questioning this particular statement by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that Bharate Bhumite Manushya Janma Yar, that one should become, those who have taken their birth in India should make their lives successful and then preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had also said that in everywhere within this world, in every town and village, Yatinagri Gram, that my holy name will be preached, my glories will be preached, and the holy name will be preached. So he's discussing this with his godbrother, and his godbrother was questioning whether or not this was just more or less nothing that you should really take seriously, not actually a fact, but more or less a suggestion, something that one should take as more or less an analogy, allegorically. But Prabhupada said, no, he said that by this distribution of the holy name, that it can be done, that one day I'll go around the world and I'll preach Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada had firm faith in the holy name of Krishna, as he wrote on the board of the Jaladuta, that he didn't consider himself to be the person who was going to preach. Rather, he considered himself to be an instrument of Krishna through the disciple succession, that he was coming to the Western world to establish what his spiritual master had desired and had given instructions. Actually, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada had already envisioned spreading Krishna consciousness around the world, and he had directed his institution for that reason, in that direction. So practically speaking, all the instructions for spreading a Krishna consciousness movement around the world were already there. Unfortunately, either his god brothers at that time didn't really believe in the instructions of their spiritual master, and what was the primary reason why they didn't agree with instructions or believe in the instructions of the spiritual master? Well, for one reason, they were all fighting with each other to become the next acharya. In other words, they really didn't take seriously, or they didn't understand fully the fact that they were actually ultimately only Krishna's servants. And that service to Krishna could be realized through the service of their spiritual master. And their spiritual master had wanted them to cooperate with each other to spread Krishna consciousness. But each one of them thought they knew better than the other, that they knew better how to serve Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, and then each one of them, many of them, became interested in becoming the acharya and showing that they knew better than everyone else how to serve their spiritual master. Unfortunately, none of them knew how to properly serve their spiritual master or fully serve him, because none of them had the idea, as Prabhupada had, to cooperate to spread Krishna consciousness. That point they missed. They may have known the philosophy. Some of them were great scholars. Some of them were quite renounced. But that point they didn't really understand very clearly, that in order to actually please their spiritual master to the fullest extent, they should cooperate with each other to spread Krishna consciousness. Many of them, they had the conception that Krishna consciousness would just be limited to India, because they, in their heart, they actually believed that Krishna was just a Hindu deity, and that the Westerners, they had some other deity to worship, and that they could not take Krishna consciousness very seriously. But Prabhupada actually believed in Krishna. He actually believed in the words of his spiritual master. He actually believed that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would spread his mission all over the world. Simply, someone should be his instrument to do it. Therefore, Prabhupada came with that idea in mind, and he expressed that in his prayer on the Jaladutta. And in 1965, he was in New York and trying to encourage his god brothers to cooperate with him. Most of them were quite inimical towards his spreading Krishna consciousness, even shortly after that, when Prabhupada was trying to get some land in Mayapur to establish a center for his Western disciples. Then many of them tried to oppose that. They went to the government and tried to stop Prabhupada from getting any land there. So they didn't try to help him, they tried to impede him. Every effort practically he made, they tried to impede him, what to speak of trying to cooperate with him. Even one brahmachari in the early days, he wanted to come and preach Krishna consciousness in the Western world. And Prabhupada said, yes, you can come, you know, just ask your spiritual master, who is a disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada. He said, no, I don't think it's a good idea to ask my spiritual master. So he said, no, ask him. You know, we only have one mission, to cooperate, to spread the mission of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, of Lord Chaitanya. So he said, no, I don't think it's a good idea. He wrote back again. So Prabhupada said, no, you ask him. So he asked him, and he said, don't go. He said, this is just a little fringe movement that Bhakti Vedanta Swami is doing. It'll never work. You shouldn't bother with it. And currently there's one sadhu, he's traveling in the Western world now, who claims he had a very intimate relationship with Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada had written him and sent him some money to send some mridangas and cartels. So even that much help they wouldn't even give him. Even this particular sadhu, who's now claiming he had a very intimate relationship with Prabhupada and has written a book, has published a book about his letters with Prabhupada, more or less it actually reveals how little help any of them would actually give him. Because in the letters book that he published, there was around 10 or 15 letters between them. And the majority of them were simply about Prabhupada repeatedly, month after month, writing to him, asking him, I've already sent the money for the mridangas and cartels, and you haven't even sent me anything. Please send me something. So after around a year and a half to 2 years, he finally sent some Mridanga and cartels. And that was his, the extent of his service to the preaching mission in the Western world. So, and that was more than most of his godbrother. Most of his, of course, this particular sadhu is not one of his godbrothers. It was his godnephew. But most of his godbrothers wouldn't cooperate even when the movement was going on. Even Prabhupada, because had sent some disciples to India earlier, because they were escaping the draft. At that time there was a Vietnamese war. So they went to India and they had no place to stay. They were in the movement for just a few months, maybe a year. They hardly knew anything about Krishna consciousness, and suddenly they were in India. So Prabhupada sent them to one mosque, and in that one mosque, immediately they started to try to convert these particular disciples of Prabhupada to get them reinitiated into their mosque. That was their assistance to Prabhupada's mission. And even one of Prabhupada's disciples took sannyas initiation from one of his godbrothers, and who was constantly running after the Western disciples. Although they wouldn't do anything, make any real effort on their own part to make Western disciples, but as soon as Prabhupada made them, they were very anxious to convert them into their followers, and then claim that they were actually the ones who were propagating Krishna consciousness all over the world. Even one of them, who became the head of part of the Gaudiya Math, because there was no Gaudiya Math, and there still is no Gaudiya Math presently, but many, many, many moths spread out all over, especially Mayapur and Vrindavan. So even one of them put out propaganda that he had sent Bhaktivedanta Swami to the Western world. He had published some paper, and that now he had come back successfully due to his mercy and brought back so many of his followers. That is, this particular sannyasi's followers. So they wouldn't do anything to help Prabhupada, but they did everything to take the credit for whatever Prabhupada accomplished. And when they couldn't take the credit, they did everything they could do practically to impede his progress. So needless to say, Prabhupada was quite discouraged dealing with his godbrothers. So he tried to, very early on, create a system within ISKCON for cooperation. Of course, nowadays, we may not be so much familiar with exactly the type of early followers Prabhupada had received. They were quite, from the spiritual point of view, they had a few rough edges. That when I joined, that no one was very clear even what the four regular principles were. There was some, although Prabhupada had posted them on the board. But I remember my temple president wasn't really so much clear whether or not they were actually true or not. We knew we weren't supposed to eat meat. The other things weren't so clear. And as far as any kind of standard program, when I joined the movement, then we didn't have Mangal Arati, but we were supposed to get up at, I believe it was 5 o'clock, which is, you know, considered quite austere at that time. And then on the weekends we got up at 6 o'clock. And there was no Mangal Arati. The only thing we had was a class. We had japa and a class. And I remember some of the relations with the devotees, although Prabhupada had tried to establish it in a very cordial way. For instance, every time the devotees would see each other, they'd pay obeisances. That was established, because that was better than, you know, the common mentality was a little not so genteel, we could say. Vaishnava etiquette wasn't so well established. Sometimes there were even fist fights in the temples. Due to the rather immature nature of the devotees. But in any case, after all, most of the devotees, a lot of them came right off the street. And then suddenly you had to live with people you probably wouldn't even look at or speak to. You had to live 24 hours a day with them, practically speaking. So this undoubtedly created some tension and frictions at times. Although there was some kind of family atmosphere in the sense that everyone was joining something new and a new movement, but no one was very much educated in devotional service. So Prabhupada, from the very, even in 1970, right away from India, Srila Prabhupada's disciples there, after associating with his godbrothers, started to send back propaganda letters that actually Prabhupada, at that time we call, at the beginning we called Prabhupada Swamiji, and all the ladies were called gopis. So Prabhupada was Swamiji, and then around 1970, 71, then there was some idea that we'd call Prabhupada Prabhupada. So Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers had started to write back that actually Prabhupada wasn't bona fide, that he had usurped this title of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, and they were criticizing him that he was just a fallen householder and that somehow or another he was usurping this position. And therefore some of Prabhupada's disciples started to have doubts, and they wrote back to some of Prabhupada's leading disciples, and they started to have doubts also. So this is part of this history is recorded in the Lilamrita. And for instance, Prabhupada started to get some indication of that. One time he was taking Charanamrita and it had, in Los Angeles, and it had salt in it. So he asked who did this, and then one girl started to giggle. And Prabhupada said, get someone else to put, you know, to do the Charanamrita. And then one time Prabhupada walked into his room and he saw that his picture was upside down on the desk. So, and then one time he asked the devotees in Los Angeles, how many rounds are you chanting? Is everyone chanting 16 rounds? And one devotee raised his hand, Bhakti Das, and said, no, we were told that we shouldn't chant 16 rounds. We didn't have time to chant 16 rounds. We had to do full-time service. And then he asked other devotees, and they all confirmed that they didn't have time to chant 16 rounds. So Prabhupada became very concerned, and then he found out that actually his letters were being censored, that all the letters, all the incoming mail that he was receiving, some of his leading disciples were looking through, reading his letters, and the ones that they didn't like, they'd prevent Prabhupada from seeing. So then Prabhupada realized that there was some conspiracy. There are other instances also. Prabhupada, he was going to go to Rath Yatra, and some of his leading disciples prevented him from going to the Rath Yatra, saying that there would be some danger there. But Prabhupada went later anyhow and began to dance there very ecstatically. That was in San Francisco. So Prabhupada realized that there was some conspiracy. And I was in Buffalo at that time. And I remember Prabhupada's secretary, Devananda, calling up and saying that Prabhupada wanted to speak to Rupanuga, who was the temple president there. And then I got Rupanuga. And Rupanuga was speaking to Prabhupada on the phone. And afterwards he told me that Prabhupada told him that there was some conspiracy against him, that he should come to Los Angeles immediately. The Prabhupada was crying on the telephone. So then the devotees went there, and of course Prabhupada had instructed them, some of his leading disciples at that time, about the conspiracy that was going on. So the root of that conspiracy at that time was coming from his godbrothers, who were trying to minimize Prabhupada's position, and especially they were trying to minimize Prabhupada's service, his activities. I remember one time, the first time I went to Mayapur in 1974, they had a first temple president's meeting, the first Mayapur festival. And we were invited to go over to visit one of Prabhupada's godbrothers' mosques. So we went over there. And as soon as we were there, one of his sannyasis, his godbrothers, one of his disciples, began to lecture. And he was explaining how Swamiji has done very nice work. He's made devotees, or he's tried to make devotees out of some drug-addicted hippies. And he went on like that. So I thought it was quite strange. We had come there to take prasadam. It was around maybe I don't know, maybe 100, less than 100 devotees. But we had gone there to take prasadam, and suddenly they were more or less criticizing us and, you know, indirectly criticizing Prabhupada. So then we went back, and then Prabhupada, his secretary, told that we had gone over there to visit his godbrother's mat, and Prabhupada said whoever went over there and heard that lecture, he was spiritually scarred. So that gave us some idea about some conflict. The conflict wasn't that Prabhupada didn't think that his godbrothers weren't spreading Krishna consciousness, or they weren't devotees of Krishna. He gave respect to some of them. But he felt that actually they had missed the point of Śrīla Bhakti Siddhānta completely, practically speaking. He's missed the whole point of Lord Chaitanya. That is, Yari Deka Tari Kaha Krishna Upadesh Amara Agayahana Tara Guru Tanaha Edesh. That anyone that you meet, Yari Deka Tari Kaha Krishna Upadesh, you should give them the instructions about Lord Krishna. And this way one should become a guru and spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. But somehow or another, perhaps due to the Bali concept of life, thinking that we are this body, that we're American or Indian or Russian, whatever, that these teachings don't apply to us. Although it's very clear in Bhagavad Gita that everyone is a spiritual being, simply covered by some external dress. But because factually the disciples of Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati Prabhupāda and most of his followers didn't really have any faith in the holy name of Krishna that could actually awaken the dormant consciousness of the soul and awaken them to their relation with Krishna, therefore they never really took seriously the idea of preaching Krishna consciousness all over the world. And when they saw it was being done, instead of appreciating it, they actually became envious. Because of their Kanishta Adhikari mentality, they became envious, and instead of recognizing Prabhupada's accomplishment, the majority of them, practically all of them, tried to minimize it to the extreme. And what they couldn't minimize, they took the credit for. So Prabhupada had a great disappointment. But he did base his society, realizing that, not that he thought that his present disciples were completely pure devotees, but he knew that if there was a structure based upon cooperation, that there was some possibility, there was more of a possibility for cooperation. Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Saraswati Prabhupāda, he had requested them to form a GBC, his disciples, but he never really gave them that much detailed instructions how to do it, nor when he was present was it actually so clearly formed and organized. So Prabhupāda, from the very beginning, started this idea of a GBC, and the whole idea of it was to cooperate, especially to print books and distribute Krishna consciousness all over the world. Prabhupada established many different ways of doing it because more than his godbrothers or anyone else on the planet at this time, he understood that Krishna consciousness is not simply a philosophical idea, but that it was practical activities to please Krishna. And that anyone who dedicated their activities to please Krishna, then Krishna would reciprocate with them. Even if they didn't understand so clearly the philosophy, if they just had some faith that Krishna was God, and that they were Krishna's servant, and if they did something with their body to please Krishna, then Krishna would reciprocate and they'd make advancement in devotional service. So Prabhupada used to have a sign, Nirbandha Krishna Sambande Yukta Vairagim Uchite, from Śrīla Rūpa Goswami's, one of his verses from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that things that are engaged in Krishna service, they become spiritualized. That this is true renunciation. That so-called renunciation, giving up material things as being false, is not real true renunciation, but real renunciation is to utilize everything in Krishna service. So Prabhupada based his spreading of Krishna consciousness on this, to engage his followers in practical activities to spread Krishna consciousness. And by doing so, they became enlivened and enlightened in Krishna consciousness enough to enthuse others to also take to the process of Krishna consciousness. Of course, Prabhupada also encouraged his disciples to study the books, because he realized that unless they did so, although they were engaged in Krishna consciousness, especially following his example and his instructions, that later on, if they got other association, they may become bewildered. That under his guidance and in the association of his followers, then he was able to convince them and enthuse them to engage in Krishna's service. And that way they became enthusiastic. But due to the workings of the material energy, the nature of the material energy, as soon as one stops the activities of devotional service, then as soon as one is in Maya, one actually believes he was always in Maya. One forgets all about his happiness he found when he was enthusiastically engaged. And believe that actually somehow or another Maya is so tricky that it convinces the devotee that all the ecstasy that you were feeling and all the happiness that you were feeling, it was just someone exploiting you. So that's the nature of Maya. So Prabhupada knew that unless the devotees were fixed up in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, then they would not be able to understand clearly what the value of Krishna consciousness is if they got into other association. So Prabhupada translated so many different books, wrote the commentaries, and based his movement primarily upon these transcendental literatures. So Prabhupada did two things. He established a movement which was based upon the instructions of his spiritual master so that devotees could learn how to cooperate and fulfill the mission of Lord Chaitanya. And at the same time, he provided transcendental literature to explain everything as clearly as possible so that not only their bodies and minds would be engaged, but also they'd have a clear understanding of what they were doing and what the purpose of the whole activities were and how to avoid falling into unwanted association. And why did the devotees accept this? Ultimately, because they believed and that there was actually a person who had actually realized Krishna. Just like in this verse, it explains that the devotee, he's not simply talking about at the end of this life leaving your body and going to some celestial place, but he's talking about how to actually experience the kingdom of God or Vaikuntha or Krishna Loka even in this very lifetime. And Prabhupada was such that he was not just theoretically talking about it, but he was actually living it himself. But I remember by my personal association with Prabhupada that I remember one time I was in, first time I saw, first engagement I went with Prabhupada was in Buffalo. And I was, Prabhupada walked in there, there was engagement, around 500 college students had come to the auditorium there. And Prabhupada walked in, and immediately it was just like being in, I thought I was in the Brahmajyoti actually. That everything became so, it was full of light and peaceful, and I had no anxiety. So I was trying to, I realized that this would be a nice place to stay in, but I knew it wasn't the ultimate goal. And then later on that year, Prabhupada came to to Boston. And most of the East Coast devotees at that time went to Boston to see Prabhupada. That was the first temple they bought. That was in December 1969. And Prabhupada had just flown in from England. And we all gathered there. Boston Temple had two floors, so the deities, little tiny deities of Radha and Krishna deities, and it was on the second floor. And I remember there was one picture of Lord Chaitanya. So we were all waiting for Prabhupada. We were having kirtan. Badraj was a very good kirtan leader, and he was leading the kirtan at that time. There were around 50 devotees from all over the West Coast gathered there to see Prabhupada. It was on the disappearance day of his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada. So I remember suddenly I saw the picture of Lord Chaitanya. It seemed to be glowing. Lord Chaitanya seemed to be becoming very enthusiastic in the picture. And then Prabhupada walked up the stairs, and everyone there that I knew there, they all had the same experience. It was just like being in Vaikuntha. The whole atmosphere became so spiritualized that it was just like there was a huge spiritual bubble in that room there. And Prabhupada sat down on his Vyasa-san, And then Prabhupada looked at me, and I saw that Prabhupada could actually see right into the spiritual soul, that he could see everything completely clearly. So at that point, I had no doubts, you know, who Prabhupada was. Of course, I had experience with Prabhupada previously. In 1969, Prabhupada came to Buffalo at that time. And so every day I'd go up and see Prabhupada before I went to college. I had classes in the afternoon. But in the morning, I'd spend the whole morning with Prabhupada usually. And Prabhupada would be lecturing and talking to one or two devotees that were there or talking to some guests. So one thing I noticed about Prabhupada was that he was always thinking about Krishna. He was always meditating upon Krishna. And so before I had joined the movement, I had some spiritual experience, so I thought I was a yogi. I should become a yogi and meditate. But I saw that Prabhupada had reached the perfection of meditation because he was always thinking about Krishna all the time. One time Prabhupada was talking to us for a couple of hours, another devotee, myself. So my attention span wasn't so great at that time, and I had some other conceptions of life. And so I was getting a little bored. Prabhupada kept on preaching to us, and I remember some of the things that Prabhupada was saying. But then I thought, well, maybe I should try and meditate on Prabhupada's aura. So I started to meditate upon Prabhupada's aura, and Prabhupada stopped immediately. He said, he looked at me and said, our process is bhakti, not yoga. So that was the last time I tried to meditate on anyone's aura. So that was one of the hints. I knew that Prabhupada had extraordinary perception. In any case, Prabhupada was the example because he was always actually quite joyful and happy, and by his presence, sometimes one could actually feel that one was actually in the spiritual world. And besides that, everything he said and his very life was all completely the same as Prabhupada's and what he had in the books. I was already initiated when Prabhupada came to Buffalo, so I had never seen Prabhupada. And when Prabhupada came, I was always very anxious to get some time to be with him. So I was, as I said, I was with him for over a week. But then I noticed, because we didn't have that many books, but I was trying to memorize the books as soon as I got them. So I noticed that whatever Prabhupada was saying was directly from his books. So then I realized whether I was with Prabhupada or I was reading his books, it wasn't actually so much of a difference. Because the same thing I would hear, at least from the point of view of spiritual instructions, the same thing was in his books. Prabhupada never said anything new. He just said what was in his books at that time. Of course, sometimes there were things that he said that I thought were unique. One time, at that time, Brahmananda had come with Prabhupada, and Garga Muni and Ray Rama, and there was a little boy named Birbhadra, who was the son of Shilavati. And one time we were sitting there with Prabhupada, and they were talking about spiritual sky incense. So we were telling Prabhupada about how they were cheating customers sometimes. So I was the type of person who, if I got extra change from the candy store, I'd give it back. Although I wasn't completely honest all the time, but in any case, I was shocked to hear that any devotee would do anything dishonest. So Prabhupada looked at me and said, with a big smile on his face, he said, business means cheat. So I thought, wow, that was like a personal instruction to me. But later on, I helped start the book distribution in Buffalo at that time. But later on, I found that in the Bhagavad Gita also. When Prabhupada, his unedited Bhagavad Gita came out, Prabhupada mentioned that for a Vaishya to do business and cheat was not considered to be unnatural, because generally business does mean you have to tell people that for you, I'm giving you this at less than it costs me because you're my friend. And so for you, I don't want to make any profit. I'm even taking a loss. So if a businessman, everyone, he actually sells it at a loss, then how could he stay in business? But unless he convinced people that actually he was giving this particular merchandise at less than cost price, then people would not be so enthusiastic to buy it. So in that way, Prabhupada meant the businessman cheating. But Prabhupada not only he spoke what he said in the books, but he completely dedicated himself to the book, especially to the teachings of his spiritual master, and he based whatever he was doing not on his own ideas, but on the ideas of his spiritual master. That he never claimed himself to be instituting the Hare Krishna movement in the Western world, but he always claimed himself to be acting as an instrument for his spiritual master and the predecessor acharyas. And indeed, by his activities, he became successful. Therefore, Prabhupada is honored, you know, within our society. And those who can understand Prabhupada clearly or fully, one can understand the whole situation clearly, they'll be able to understand why Srila Prabhupada should be appreciated and why his instructions should be followed. Of course, that he never claimed himself to be instituting the Hare Krishna movement in the Western world, but he always claimed himself to be acting as an instrument for his spiritual master and the predecessor acharyas. And indeed, by his activities, he became successful. Therefore, Prabhupada is honored, you know, within our society. And those who can understand Prabhupada clearly or fully, one can understand the whole situation clearly, they'll be able to understand why Srila Prabhupada should be appreciated and why his instructions should be followed. Of course, many of Prabhupada's followers later on became disappointed, especially they became disappointed in their fellow godbrothers because of their mistakes that they made. And they thought that Prabhupada had made those mistakes. But actually, Prabhupada didn't make any mistake, because whatever he was doing according to the authority of the predecessor acharyas. But we should not think that the spiritual master, even a great acharya, is the super soul. Although it says, Krishna Shakti Vinanahi Tara Pravartana, Kali Kalara Nama, Krishna Sankirtan, Krishna Shakti Vinanahi Tara Pravartana, that unless one is empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. So Prabhupada was actually empowered. Not only he was preaching about Krishna consciousness, but he was actually experiencing Krishna consciousness. That is, he had realized that there's no difference between Krishna and Krishna's name, his form, his quality, and his pastimes. Therefore, in any circumstance, he was always meditating upon Krishna, and he was in the spiritual world with Krishna and his different associates. Always meditating upon Krishna's transcendental activities and pure love for Krishna. But he gave instructions and he gave responsibility to persons who perhaps were immature. Of course they were going to be immature. They had grown up not with the Krishna consciousness philosophy. They had grown up, as soon as they were born, practically speaking, some of them were even fed drugs. At that time, the hippie movement, they thought that it would be cool to turn on the children, to initiate them into drugs, even when they were 6 months old. I don't know, that's probably still going on, I'm sure. But that was like the hippie mentality. So from their very childhood, they were fed meat, intoxications, the whole bodily conception of life was indoctrinated into the followers. So to imagine that by some miracle that someone was going to convert everyone and to become pure devotees overnight, that was quite utopian. Although Prabhupada would sometimes encourage his disciples that they were advanced, and some of them actually believed they were quite advanced, but actually most of them were quite immature. But if they followed Prabhupada's instructions, gradually they could make some progress. In spite of the fact that there were so many imperfections within our society due to the imperfections within the devotees, but because they were following Prabhupada's instructions, so many wonderful things were happening in spite of all the imperfections. As I mentioned before, I remember one time I was, because I, by Krishna's mercy, Krishna had actually given me some real insight and experience into Krishna consciousness when I had first joined. That for some reason Krishna had given me some mercy. So I was actually had some transcendental experiences way beyond any experiences I'm even having now. So I was firmly convinced that Krishna was God and that there was a higher platform. But I thought that at that time there were not so many literatures. But Rupanuga had gotten one book called the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which was translated by one scholar, and his godbrother had paid for it. And I thought that this was some more esoteric information, because we only had the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam at that time, and a little blue Bhagavad Gita. So I started to stay at night, up at night reading it. So I had this idea that I was on the Bhava platform, and that within a short period of time, that it turned into prema and I reached the perfection of life and go back to Godhead. So I was wondering how that would happen. But I dared not ask my temple president, who in the first place told me I shouldn't read the book anyhow. So I was sending money to Prabhupada whenever we got some money from distributing his Bhagavad Gita. I was sending it to him. And at that time, I sent him some money and I had asked him the question, how does bhava turn into prema? So Prabhupada wrote me back a letter, and he was, in the first paragraph, he was explaining how if you simply go out every day and chant Hare Krishna and distribute back to Godhead in Bhagavad Gita, then your life will become successful. And then in the next paragraph, he wrote that in San Francisco, we've just had Rath Yatra, and 10,000 boys and girls were chanting and dancing in full spiritual in full transcendental ecstasy. The boys and girls in your country are generally good souls. That's why they've taken birth in such a nice country. That if they simply engage in Christian service, that will make everything complete. That in Buffalo and in New York in just 2 weeks, they've distributed 3,000 Back to Godhead magazines. And then I've heard that in Buffalo, you're also distributing Back to Godheads very nicely. So please continue in this way and your success in life is guaranteed. That as Krishna sees that you're working seriously to help bring his other children back to the spiritual kingdom, then he'll bestow all his blessings upon you, that Krishna is never ungrateful to our efforts to please him, rest assured. And then on the other side of the page, Prabhupada wrote, as far as the question about how does bhava turn into prema, that there's no need to worry yourself or other such topics at the present time. And then at the end he said, but you said that you sent me $50, but it wasn't in the envelope. Where is it? He said, surely I'll be printing my book called The Nectar of Devotion, and then you can read something about it in there. So to me he had written that, and then I remember reading another letter he had written to one Mataji, the wife of Hamsaduta, Himavati, had written him something similar, and he probably said, yes, that is a symptom of bhava. And then another Mataji had written to him about how she could get bhava. She was a pujari in Boston at that time, and probably said, keep your nails close. Cut your nails very close. That was how you could get bhava. So Prabhupada was quite an expert preacher. He knew how to preach in such a way as to encourage his rather immature followers to simply stay on the path. As I mentioned, I don't know exactly what it was, but Pandavijaya was mentioning to me that he had heard a lecture by Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was saying in the lecture that I cheated you. And the devotees were going, no, no, Prabhupada, you didn't cheat us. And Prabhupada said, no, yes, I did cheat you. And they say, no, no, Prabhupada, you didn't cheat us. And Prabhupada said, no, I did cheat you. I told you it was going to be very easy, Krishna consciousness, but actually it's quite difficult. So somehow or another, Prabhupada was able to, by his personal example, by his association, by his instructions, by his classes, he was able to enthuse the devotees to carry on the mission of Lord Chaitanya. And by engaging that mission, I'm sure most of them got actually higher they were able to transcend the bodily platform and actually experience transcendental happiness on a different level. Unfortunately, as Prabhupada had predicted, that after his disappearance, they had forgotten through the influence of Maya. This is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada. After his disappearance, that his disciples became more or less influenced by the illusory energy and began, after some time, instead of to cooperate to spread the movement, they began to get into legal litigations to take over the movement for their own personal interests. So that's the real test of our society, whether we can actually try to understand Prabhupada's teachings as clearly and thoroughly as possible, and then apply it in a practical way to become Krishna conscious and also to spread the movement to others. That as soon as we become so fanatical about spreading Krishna consciousness, we forget to become Krishna conscious ourselves, then we'll be in a very precarious position. And as soon as we become doubtful of the reason or the purpose of spreading Krishna consciousness, and we try to capture for our own interest, for our own personal benefit without giving it to others, then it will also be in a precarious position. So, practically speaking, in the Western world, there has been no success like Prabhupada's. Even now, some of his godbrothers are coming to the Western world. But, practically speaking, all their followers, or the majority of their followers, are just ISKCON, former ISKCON devotees, who've gotten angry at other ISKCON devotees and are trying to do something against, more or less, out of animosity against them, or out of disappointment, or for whatever reason. But no one has actually taken up the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the same way as Prabhupada. But whoever there are, whether it's very few godbrothers that are left to Prabhupada or their followers, the purpose of this mission is to get everyone to cooperate. That if one actually wants to become the next acharya, like Prabhupada, then the way of becoming the next acharya is to get everyone to cooperate to spread Krishna consciousness. To put aside our petty differences, especially this idea that I have to be prominent because I'm the oldest devotee, or I have, you know, I'm from India, or this or that, or I'm initiated by this devotee. To put aside all these petty differences, all these bodily conceptions of life, and to work cooperatively to actually please the predecessor acharyas and distribute Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement cooperatively. So that anyone who does that, they're actually the acharya. And anyone who claims that they're an acharya who's not doing this, then they're actually not an acharya. They're simply following the same path as the previous institution, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, which failed, practically speaking. Had disappeared until Prabhupada came back and showed the actual method of pleasing the predecessor acharyas and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So today we honor Srila Prabhupada's appearance. Of course, the Acharya is always appearing. Prabhupada has never really left. He's there in his deity form, and he's especially here in the form of his books and in the form of his devotees who are following his instructions. Before Prabhupada left, one leading governor came to visit him. That is in November 2nd, 1977. As well as one leading life member, an industrialist, and they wanted to find out from Prabhupada who would be the next leader in the Hare Krishna movement. And so they didn't want to talk to Prabhupada's disciples, so Prabhupada's disciples left the room. And at the end, when the disciples came back, Prabhupada said they wanted to know who the next acharya would be, who Prabhupada would appoint. And Prabhupada said, I'm not going to appoint anyone. More or less, what he said is that all my disciples, they'll be the next leader. As much as they've understood and followed my teachings, they'll be the leader. So the idea was never to establish anyone as an acharya, that anyone will become a leader in our society as much as they actually become a servant, not as much as they become the master. Unfortunately, this movement is a learning experience. And therefore, that's what we're trying to learn, how to actually become a servant, and that anyone who claims, whether they're a guru, or a GVC, or a temple president, or the temple commander, or the bhakti leader, or the one who's cleaning the head dishwasher, Anyone claims that they're the master of the movement, that this has become their movement, or even takes that attitude or understanding, then they give up their position of transcendence. That everyone has equally, whoever they are, whatever their duty is, whatever we're doing, everyone has the same duty to do something for Krishna. That there is no high and low position. That everyone is a servant of Krishna within the society, and everyone is supposed to serve Krishna under the instructions of Prabhupada, who most perfectly demonstrated how to become a servant of Krishna's servants. So if we actually want Prabhupada's mercy, if we actually want the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then we have to remember that we're simply servants of the predecessor acharyas. One time I sent Prabhupada a letter with some money in it also for the book fund, and Prabhupada wrote me back. He said, thank you very much for this contribution of love, that we're all servants of Krishna working through consecutive disciplined success. Oh, he said, if there's any thanks, it shouldn't go to me. It should go to my spiritual master. He said, we're all servants of Krishna working through the consecutive disciplined succession. Now please try and understand the books that I've written, and then sometimes afterwards you'll have to help carry on the disciplined succession. So, Prabhupada considered himself a servant, and therefore he was successful, and therefore he became a transparent via media for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the spiritual world. So as much as we do that also, whatever our particular service is, then we'll become successful. We'll get the mercy of Krishna, and ultimately we'll be able to become Krishna conscious. So thank you very much. Are there any questions? Yes.
What about cooperating with devotees who are initiated by spiritual masters outside Islam? I noticed that some of the members of the Namahatas are getting invited to programs as gurus outside Islam and being invited to these sort of how should we react to that? Should we let them go?
Well, you have, unless you have a rope to tie them down. Of course, we should try to understand things clearly as possible. Just like we don't want to offend sadhus, at the same time we should be intelligent enough to understand things properly. Generally, especially the current sadhus who are preaching the Western world, they use initiation almost like a weapon in order to get followers. Although it clearly mentions what the qualifications for initiation are, but they seem to just try. I remember one Gaudiya Math Sannyasi, he was visiting South America, and he held an initiation. Most of the people who were at the initiation, they knew nothing about Krishna consciousness. Maybe they were there for a week or something. They didn't even come in dhotis or tilak or saris or anything. They weren't even following the four regular principles. So, but still, he was initiating them, some with first and some with second initiation. And even the milkman who came in to deliver the milk got initiated. So, this type of, they should be informed because we take initiation seriously. In other words, suddenly the person, the milkman, got initiated, and now his spiritual master had become the representative of God. Although he didn't even know who God was, he didn't even know who his spiritual master was. So this is it's more or less not in the spirit of cooperation, at least, spreading Krishna consciousness. It's in the, maybe the devotee had the mood of being very merciful. And maybe there are other reasons why initiation is given so cheaply. So in any case, we should understand what the difference is between Prabhupada's mood. I think the main difference is that Prabhupada wanted everyone to cooperate, just as his spiritual master wanted everyone to cooperate to spread Krishna consciousness. Unfortunately, the present leaders of the Gaudiya Math, some of them are at least, are not in the different maths that are coming to the Western world. A lot of them aren't really in the spirit of cooperating. They want to get as many followers as possible, and they take advantage of the fact that they're from an Indian background, and they're elderly, and they appear to be a sadhu. And because of the sentimentalism in the Western world, people think that anyone from India who's a sadhu and older, he must have realized God. So they take advantage of that, and they speak something about some elevated topics that they can't understand, so that it convinces them that they must have understood God. And then they say, well, why don't you just get initiated? Although they have no idea really what it's all about, they said, why not? You know, it's almost like, you know, why don't you, you know, take some prasadam? And then they get initiated, and suddenly they find out afterwards that they can't associate so intimately with ISKCON anymore. They didn't even know what went on. So that's quite unfortunate. So it's really our duty to explain to them as clearly as possible, in the most non-offensive way as possible, you know, what is the initiation, what is the position of ISKCON, what is the difference between people who are going around trying to present themselves as acharyas, founders of new movements, and even followers of Prabhupada, the fact that Prabhupada didn't want acharyas. He didn't want anyone to become the next acharya. He wanted everyone, just like his spiritual master wanted, since they're coming from generally from the Gaudiya Math. The founder of the Gaudiya Math wanted simply cooperation. He didn't want people to travel around the world to present themselves as an acharya. Even Prabhupada didn't want to become the sole acharya, although he said he was the founder acharya of ISKCON. But from the very beginning, he tried to get his godbrothers to participate and cooperate in every way possible. Although we can see that none of them wanted to do it. Although, so, yes. Okay. I think we have to end here. So, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Mahahotsava, the appearance day of Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.